Grab your notes. Welcome to Eastlake Church in the first week of our series, Hold Our Terror, How to Raise Amazing Kids. And I'm Robin, I'm the lead pastor. Eastlake is a church for everyone, and there's no perfect kids. You weren't a perfect kid, and yours are not. And there's no perfect parents. You're not a perfect parent, and you didn't have perfect parents. And so because of that, there's no perfect families. Your family's not perfect, and my family is not perfect. One woman was asked at the store, she got all her kids running around, and someone came up to her, you know, and said, if you had to do it all over again, would you have children? And she stopped and thought, she said, well, yeah, I'd have kids, but not the same ones. And sometimes the imperfections in our families, that's what we're going to talk about during this series. You know, your kids are a constant in your life. If you think about how much time you have for relationships, there's only so much time. And your children are the one constant that you have. You know, think about all those people that signed your high school yearbook, and we're going to be friends forever, and where are they now? But your children, they remain. They're always with you. You're with your parents, and your children are with you. And life always gets easier when I become clear about my role, when I have clarity about my role. And so we're going to talk this weekend about what's my role as a parent. How do I get clarity in that? Look, it's the big idea this weekend. Our primary role is to love and train our children. Primary role. Love and train our children. Let's read a little bit of the Bible to give this credibility. Fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, all this happens as a process because we grow up and we process towards adulthood. There's different phases that children go through. And it's important that we're able to figure out our role in each one of those phases. We process along in life with them, and when they go through a certain phase, we need to have the role that's appropriate for that phase. So we're always shifting roles because children are shifting the phase of life that they're in, and now it takes another role we have to change, and it's so critical. And the lines aren't solid. It gets real blurry, and they overlap, and it's difficult to know. It's not just perfect, and there's different timelines, but it's critical that I have the right role, that it matches, it fits with the phase that my child is in. So let's jump right in and take a look at some of these different roles. Number one, caregiver. Very first phase, like baby to about 5 years old, the caregiver, that's our role. You do a lot of need meeting. The baby is hungry, you feed the baby. The baby pukes, you clean up the puke. The baby poops its diaper, you call its mother. I remember the very first time I had in charge of my son, Capono. I didn't do too much the first month or so. Clarice taught aerobics, and so it was time for her to go back to work. And so, you know, for the afternoon, I'm going to be the caregiver for my son, Capono. And so, you know, I didn't think it was any big deal. Clarice left the milk and the wet ones and gave me all the stuff. And bye, you know, you got him for the afternoon. And so, you know, I played with him a little bit. And you know how babies, they wear those little uniforms that have their feet in it too type things. You know, and they're very economical about the way they dress. Well, he had one of those on. And I'm playing with him. And when we get done, you know, I put him into his little crib. He's there. And they're so cute as they're about ready to go to sleep. You know, little angels, you know, but when they wake up. Anyways, so, you know, I'm in, like, watching TV. And all of a sudden, I hear this howling like a pack of wolves back there. You know, he's crying, screaming. And I went back there. I thought, what in the world's going on? You know, and I go back in and I'm looking at him. What could possibly be wrong with him? And then I notice he had a yellow, like little full-on suit on. And I noticed right down by his ankle, about the size of a quarter, is a brown spot. And I thought, gosh, what's that? And as I got closer, I went, that's crap. And I was like, oh, how does crap get way down there? So I pull him out of the, you know, little bassinet crib thing, and I put a blanket onto the ground, and I pulled off this thing, and it looked like somebody had taken my son and just dipped him in like a pot of crap.
I mean, from the waist down, all the way down, he was just like covered in this stuff. And I'm going to like do a true confession. As soon as I saw it, I just got up and ran right into the bathroom, into the tub, and just like lost my lunch. Like, boom, right off the bat, you know. And I'm gone for like maybe 30 seconds, and I come back, and his hands were flailing. So now he's got that in all of it. It's in his hair and all around. I'm like, I saw that. I'm right back to the bathroom. You know, you see, you're like, hey, wait, I'm a man here, you know, so you're nearly hyperventilating, you know, and it's like, you go back in there, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this thing, you know, and I pulled out one of those little wet one things, those little wipes, it's like a postage stamp. I'm like, this is not like what I need for a job like this, you know, so I throw it aside, go into the bathroom, and I get a huge towel off the rack, and I just wet the entire thing down in the sink, and I come in, and I just throw it on it, roll around in that for a minute, you know, and clean them all up and get them all settled. And you know, this phase, lots of meeting of needs with not a lot returned. He didn't thank me for that. He didn't thank me one bit. He didn't say, hey, Dad, thanks for cleaning me up. I really appreciate it. Nothing. Because at this phase, not a lot comes back, it seems, at times. You know, I mean, you just meet needs, meet needs, meet needs, meet needs, meet needs during this phase. And by the way, in all these different phases, parents have different aptitudes. So you're going to discover in these phases that, you know, this comes pretty natural to me. I like cleaning crap, you know. It's like, but it didn't for me. This was a challenging phase for me because I thought I was going to be very good at the baby phase, and I found out I'm not that good at it. And through the different phases, that's when you look to Jesus, when you discover, I'm just not that great at this phase. You know, you're meeting the needs, and you think, is this all it's about? No, it's not all it's about. Like, write somewhere in your notes, there's another thing going on. It's during this phase. What are we trying to teach our children? Well, you can't, you know, this is what you're trying to teach them. I mean, you can't teach them not to poop their diaper, but you can teach them this. You don't always get your way in life. Children come out of the womb thinking they get their way about everything. And if they don't get their way, if they fuss enough, and if they cry enough and complain enough, they will always get their way. We all know adults that their parents didn't do a very good job with them at this phase. They're in their mid-30s and they don't get their way and they cry and complain and fuss and act like, if I just raise enough, you know, fussing, I'll get my way, because they never learned at this phase in life that you don't always get your way. And this is a critical thing that we're teaching our children in this first phase of life. One of the first things they need to learn is you don't always get your way. You're going to have to deal with that, and you can't always just fuss and cry and complain. Because we've seen people like that are adults, and those kind of people get excluded. And they don't get promotions. And they don't get invited out to parties, and nobody really wants to be around them because everything has to be about them all the time. And then they fuss and they cry and complain when they don't get their way. And most of them are just like, change your own diaper, dude. You know, so you're training your kids. You don't always get your way. And they think that they should get their way. The little demons. I mean, they think they should always. I watch when parents come to Eastlake and they have a little baby and they go into the nursery for the very first time. And it's, oh, I can't wait to have my child go to the nursery so I can have like 60 minutes. And so they go into the nursery and here it comes. The baby recognizes, I'm not getting my way. So it starts to cry and complain. And we believe in age-appropriate ministry here. So the best place for the kids is in the, you know, the ministries that are prepared for them, because we background check and we do rigorous interviews and we make sure that's a great place for them. So the nurseries are awesome. So they bring the baby in and the baby starts to complain. It's holding onto the leg. Don't leave me. Don't leave me. Snot coming out of its face. And you see their knees start to buckle of the parents. Oh, come here, little baby, baby, baby. There. And they're training the little baby, you'll always get your way. Leave him in the nursery, it'll be good for him. Walk away and thank God. Say to yourself, I'm so glad there's workers in there to take care of my little maniac. I get to go have an hour of adult time. Leave him down there. They need it. We've all seen adults that never got that lesson. Did you get that lesson? Just check in. How do you respond when you don't get your way? Maybe somebody gave you your way and you became convinced that you should always have it. And now life is really hard. How come? Because when you get into school, the teachers don't always give you your way. and you start playing athletics, and it's a shock that the coach doesn't always give you your way, and the referee doesn't always give you your way, and then you get your first job, and you find out, wait a minute, I didn't know that a boss doesn't always give me my own way, and then you get into your first serious relationship, and you really find out you don't always get your way. How's it going for you? This is a very important phase. And our role as a caregiver, one of the most caring things we can do, besides changing and wiping their little butts, is to make sure that we start to train them in life. You don't always get your way. Now, are they going to like that? No. They're going to complain, and they're going to throw a fit, and they're not. Look at what the Bible says. Look at this. Could we read this together? Look at there. There's a little part in Hebrews. Could we read it together? And do not leave me hanging like a bunch of lame-os. Read this with me, okay? Here we go. No discipline. 1, 2, 3. No discipline is enjoyable while it's happening. It's painful. But afterward, there will be a peaceful harvest of right living for those who are trained in this way. It's afterward. Now write somewhere in your notes these three words. Later is longer. This is a short little phase. It's not. It seems like a long time. As a new parent, I thought, oh man, I'm going to have so much time with my kids. But let me tell you something. Later is way longer than any of these phases. And you have to teach them now. You're training them. You can't always just cry and complain and pitch a fit when you don't get your way. You've got to learn something better than that. Okay? Second phase, right in ruler. I don't mean to measure things with. I mean a king or a queen or ruler. Now, before you go, that wacko, what's he talking about? Let me read you something, okay? Before you push back, let me read you something out of the Bible. Kings who are fair to the poor will rule forever. Correct your children, and they will be wise. Children out of control disgrace their mothers. And we all remember as kids what it was like when we did things that disgraced us. It was embarrassing, and it can leave a mark. And I know in our, you know, it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, how much authority should we have with our children? And they need our authority. Listen, think of your family like a little kingdom. Your children are not smart enough, and they're not wise enough, and they don't have the kind of relationship with God, and they don't have enough experience to rule your kingdom. So the job, by default, falls to you. But guess what? They're going to try to rule that kingdom. You have to rule the kingdom. But you have to do it in a certain way. Look what it says. A king who is fair. See, a lot of us don't like authority because we had kings and queens in our life that were not fair. They made decisions that were not in our best interest. Are you rebelling against authority because of the way your parents ruled you? And I live by a park, and I see if I've seen one mother, I've seen 100 mothers, or even, you know, dads. I've just seen it. You know, they're over there, and they're, you know, they're like playing with the Billy's on the swing and playing on the bars and everything. And then the mom stands up and says, "Okay, Billy, it's time to go." And he's like a deaf kid. He hears nothing. He just keeps swinging and playing and laughing. Now, 15 minutes ago when she called him over and gave him a dollar for an ice cream, well, he had fantastic hearing then. But now he can't hear a thing. Billy, come on now. I said it's time to go. He keeps swinging, jumping, playing with his friends, running around. He starts even playing more. Have you ever noticed that about your children? When you tell them it's time to start playing, they think if they play harder, you'll forget that they didn't mind. So then he just really starts playing around, and then the counting begins. I love this part. And it's always very authoritative. Billy, I'm going to count to three. 1, 2, 2.5. You know, and Billy, he didn't even care that she's counting. He's like, count till you die blue in the face, girl. I don't care. And you say, now, Billy, I said it's time to come over here right now. Don't make me say 3, Billy. I've already said 2.5. And Billy's just like, someone didn't tell her I'm the king. They need your authority. They have to have it. I was talking with a psychiatrist this week that works in the clinic with children, teenagers at the University of Utah. And she was telling me that, and this is one of the reasons that our services are PG in here, because we talk about stuff in here that's adult content. If you want to bring your elementary kids into the service, that's fine. First grade and on can come in this room, but they're going to hear some things, so you got to be careful. Because we have places that's appropriate for them. They'll hear words, and she told me that she's working with a lot of teenagers that have suicidal thoughts, young teenagers. And this phase is the phase that sets up the teenage years. This is like from about 5 to 12 years old, write it in your notes. First phase, 0 to 5. Second phase, 5 to 12 years old. And it's the phase that sets up the teenage years. And she has a lot of the teenagers that are contemplating and struggling with suicidal thoughts. And we're talking about it, and as we were talking, she said, you know, she goes, one of the biggest problems is, and the word is lawlessness. She said, what we're starting to discover is when teenagers have not had authority in their life, they become lawless. It's like they're just floating around. See, how they interpret no rules and standards and no authority is nobody cares enough about me to parent me. They're not interested in me. And that spirals into their teen years. They've actually done a study. They have discovered that children that have parenting that is not good parenting, parents teach them the wrong things, are healthier than parents that teach their children no things. I understand that one. I came from a family like that. And I'll just always put my stuff out there so you can hear it. When we got into the teen years, all my friends started to experiment with drugs and alcohol and more drugs. And so it was our life. We were just out at night taking drugs. And there was always the end of the night ritual when the Visine came out, you know. And, you know, you're smoking so much weed and you got nachos all over your face. And they're like, you know, put the Visine in because when you get home, you know, you don't want your parents to see your red eyes. You'll get busted. You know, and so it don't matter that they're half shut and you can't talk, but your eyes will fool them if they're not red, you know. So a bunch of dimwits. Anyways, we got the Visine, and it's going around the circle, and I always took the circle, and everybody's like, I got to put this in here so my parents don't catch me. I'll get so grounded, and I'd grab it and say, me too, man, I'll get in so much trouble. I mean, my parents find out, and it was all a lie. My parents smoked weed right in front of me. Drugs were a very normal part of my life. You talk about feeling like disinterested? They didn't even know if I came home or not. I would stay out sometimes 2 and 3 days and never come home, and nobody ever called. No one ever looked for me. Nobody tried to find me. When I walked in, it was like there was no questioning of where have you been. I was one of these floaters that we were talking about. They just didn't seem like they cared. And I went through my teen years trying to figure out, does anybody care? I mean, what's the point? Nobody cares. Now, I know some of you would say, my family was just the opposite of that. I had a tyrant in my family. The ruler in my family was way over the top with authority. Oh, they were great on church, and everybody thought they were. They came off as they were just the greatest parent. But at home, they were unaccepting and they were demanding. And it just was. You know, it's very difficult when your parents represent themselves one way in public, but they treat you a different way in public. Now, listen to me. One of my goals has always been that I'm the same place everywhere I go. So when I'm up here, I'm going to be that way. And if that doesn't work for you, then you'll have to find another church. And if it didn't work for my family, they were going to have to deal with it because I didn't want to be, you know, Mr. Oh, gosh, just praise the Lord and everything in front of people. And then when with my kids, be angry and mean and unaccepting. Just tried to, like, be solid wherever I went. And that meant the screw-ups came with it. But if you've been a part of a family that was all a big show until you got home, you're not interested in authority. I understand that. There's a lot of pushback. And see, what the scripture is saying here, what the Bible is saying here is a king who is fair. Not just a king. Servant leadership. See, this is the opportunity. Listen now, in this phase, this is your opportunity. 5 years old to 12, this is the opportunity. It's the opportunity to teach your children about authority. That authority can be fair and in their best interest. I had a hard time in my teen years with teachers and coaches, and every time I came up against authority, I didn't like it, and I thought everybody was out to answer me. And I just, this phase is when you teach your children You can trust me. You can trust me. And if you'll trust me and if you'll listen to me, you'll be glad that you did. I'm the authority in your life. This is the phase that we teach them. Authority is a part of life. People are going to be an authority over you. You're going to have people that you're authority over. It's a part of our life, and authority can be fair. We can demonstrate that for them in this phase right here. And you know what? When they experience fair authority, they feel like I'm worth something. I have value. Somebody's interested in me. How old are your kids? How did your parents do in this phase? And how does it cause your life to go now? And how old are your kids? You're the ruler. How old are they? They need to see that authority can be fair. Now let's look at number three. First phase, 0 to 5, caregiver, 5 to 12, ruler. And then this third phase is coach. The coaching phase. And the coaching phase, now the problem with the coaching phase is that it, once we get into the teen years, this is the teenage years. So Mark Twain, here's what Mark Twain said. Huckleberry Finn, he wrote Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, Tom Sawyer, he said, when your child turns 10 years old, put him in a barrel and feed him through a hole. When they turn 13, plug up the hole. Is this on? That was a joke. But, I mean, honestly, in families, it gets very chaotic. And it gets very crazy. And a lot of it is because it's difficult to find our role during these years. Because a lot of parents, they still try to be the caregiver during the teenage years. Or they try to be the ruler. Have you heard parents? If you're going to act like a child, you'll be treated like a child. They say that to their 16-year-old. There's fallout with that. You'll reinforce their immaturity. You'll shame them. And here's the truth. They're not a child anymore. Man, if you are still trying to pull the roller card, like if I'm going to pull the ruler card on you, it's over, Rover. That happened back there. At this point, there better be a relationship in place because you're coaching. And by the way, a coach is on the sidelines, not on the field. You know, just because your volcano was like stupid in fifth grade, this is not your shot. You know, let them do their own school projects. Is that the biggest crack up when you see the 18-wheelers bring in the third, fourth graders' projects and you're like, they did do that. This is the phase, listen now, this is the phase that we allow our children to feel the weight of their decisions. It's very important. Our whole life is shaped by our choices. And in the teen years, if we still rule them or caretake them, they don't feel the weight of their choices. And listen, they're almost adults now. For the rest of their life, they're going to shape everything by their choices. And if they don't learn to feel the weight of their choices, they'll never learn how to make choices. Kids need to fail so they can learn how to succeed. And we're coaching them at this point. See, this is critical. This is the time of their life where they make so many major decisions, and they fortunately get to go through this phase with a coach. They get the advantage of our experience and all the mistakes that we've made and all the insights that we have and our relationship with God. They get to have all of that if they choose to have it. And guess what? Oftentimes they won't. It's a very painful time because when they're trying to decide, who do I trust? Who do I go to tell me what to do? There's a strong tendency to pick their peers and friends because that's who they want to be accepted by. And in this stage, the big, big question is, how much of their private life will they actually let me be a part of? I was very idealistic at this stage as a young dad. I thought, I'm going to get to know everything, and they're going to tell me all kinds of stuff. It's like, not even close. You think it. And even when you make the good shift, it's difficult. But hear me out. If you don't make the shift, you'll just fight about how clean their room is or their grades. And you won't be anywhere near the important stuff that they're trying to decide upon because they're making a lot of big decisions in this stage. Now listen, when your little baby comes into your life, you have size and position. You're way, way bigger, and it's easy to have the power. Elementary school, you're way bigger. You got the money, size and position. You have the power. But when they become teenagers, size and position doesn't mean anything anymore because they can see the finish line. And they're just like, I'll just hide all this crap from them and fake it because I'm almost out. You got to have something more. There's got to be a relationship there. You're coaching at this phase. I didn't have a dad at all when I grew up, and I was fortunate to have my grandparents for a long period of time. Then I moved away as a teenager, and I lived with my friend and his family, and his dad was like a father figure to me. But the real father figure that I had during this time was the vice principal of the high school that I went to, Dave Sheets. And he just took me under his wing. He just made a point to take me under his wing. I come over to his house. I knew his family. And I know him to this day, very close to him, all these years later. He was the vice principal of the high school I went to. And he was a coach to me. Didn't try to be my dad, never tried to act like a dad, but he would coach me. And I remember one time I was just about ready to graduate. It was about a month before I graduated, my senior year. And I wanted to buy this car. It was an old Chevy Impala that had been lowered. And it was aqua blue, and it had aqua blue tuck and roll interior. And I just knew I had to have it with one of those little dogs in the back whose head goes like this. I wanted that car. Had mags all the way around. And I'm talking to Dave. I'm like, man, I'm gonna buy this car. And Dave looks at me and goes, what are you buying that car for? And I'm buying it for. That car is dope. It's sweet. You know, I want that car. He's like, Robin, listen, the time to have bought that car was like when you were 16, sophomore in high school. You don't roll up to college in that car. And besides, when you're going off to college, you're going to need money. That car is going to break every other week. This is the time in your life that you buy dependable transportation. You get a boring little old Corolla. And I thought about that, and I thought about that. And he had earned my trust as a coach. And so I didn't buy that Impala. Broke my dang heart. But he was right. This is the phase. Now listen. This is the phase where we have to let our children feel the weight of their decisions. Because they're going to make choices, and those choices are going to shape their life. And they have the advantage of you being a coach in these teenage years, but you can't be the ruler. Don't fall into the trap. If you act like a kid, you'll be. Don't. Better to let them crash and burn. And be there as a coach, because they need to learn the weight of their choices in this phase. How old are your kids? Clarice and I both came from blended families. Hers was sort of blended, and mine was way dysfunction junction blended. And, you know, we just came into our relationship like that. That's how we came into our relationship. It was difficult for me in these teenage years to let my children feel the weight of their decisions because I wanted them to have such a better life than I had. Because when you don't have a father or you don't know where your father is or you're all blended up, you're like, I'm going to take care of this kid. And you can forget that in caretaking them, you're taking some of the weight of their choice off. And then they don't learn how to make choices. How did you learn how to make better choices? Bad choices. But if you don't let that happen as a coach, they're not going to learn. How old are your kids? And then let me ask this question. How did your folks do with you? What were they like? Did they stare a caregiver? Like, did they stay too long? Are they still trying to be a ruler? Some parents are like that. They're crazy. It's like they bribe you. I have a new Winnebago for you over at the house in the driveway if you were to stop over sometime and stay for like about a week. But if not, and they like, you know, the truth is, mm-mm. Look at the fourth phase, it's advisor. First phase, caregiver, 0 through 5, wiping lots of butts, but you're training your children, you don't always get your way. You can't just fuss about it. Second phase, you're the ruler, you have a kingdom, you're the most qualified person. Jesus will help you because he's a fair ruler. You could teach them that there's always authority. They'll learn. They need to learn how to deal with authority, and you can be a fair king and teach them about that. Then in the third phase, you're the coach. You're letting them feel the weight of their decision. The whole phase now, you're training them. Life is about choices. You're coaching them. The last phase is the phase that I'm in. It's the advisor phase. My child, listen closely to my teaching and learn common sense. My advice is useful, so don't turn away. You can circle that. That's the phase that I'm in right now. I don't have any authority over my children at all. My sons are adults now. I don't have any authority. And the only influence that I have is the influence that they grant me. That's where I am. And when I was younger, I thought the whole thing was going to last so long. You know, babies, teenagers, so long. And now that I'm here at this stage, I look back and let me tell you, I really get that later is longer. Because the longest time I'm going to have with my children is this phase right here. I'm a parent and friend to them. And my whole philosophy can sort of be summed up, my whole goal summed up in, I never wanted my children to turn away from me. That was always north on my compass. I always wanted my children to want to be with me and to choose me and to want to be with us. I've had buddies and friends, and you listen to them, and they dread going to their parents' house at Christmas time. They don't want to go to the birthday parties. They don't want to hang around their parents. They don't like to be with their parents. It's like their heart is turned away from their parents. And I want my kids to always like being around me and love me, and even though I'm goofy, it's like, you know, oh, I want them to like the dad that still doesn't know how to use the frickin' remote to get the TV going. You know, it's like, I call my son, I can't figure this out, he's at work. I can't get ESPN to work, you know, and I'm sure he's rolling his eyes, like, God, Dad, the 10th time, you know. I look terrible in hats, but I always try to find a hat. All my life, my kids have had to come up to me and say, oh, Dad, don't buy that, you know you don't look good in hats. I want them to like me and be with me and always want to be, I want them to come for Christmas and bring their kids. And I want them to be with me and Clarice. I want them to like coming and driving. My kids will always have fridge rights in my home. They will never knock at my front door. I want them to be with me. I want them, and you know what? When they're facing like challenges in the future and problems, I want them to turn towards me. I want to be involved, but I understand now it's invitation only. Invitation only now. My influence is granted in their life. And later is longer. My whole goal as the advisor is just to be welcomed in and for them to desire to want to be with me. In this phase, you're teaching your children something. You're wanting to reinforce what's always been there. Listen now, no matter what you ever go through, I will always be there for you. That's what you're teaching and reinforcing in this stage. And don't wait until this stage to start to send that message. No matter what you ever do, no matter what you ever go through, I will always be there for you, and we will always be close. You never have to turn away from me, because I'm never going to turn away from you. You're reinforcing that. And that's the bottom line. I mean, that's the bottom line. Look, the quality of your relationship determines the weight of your influence. Later's longer. And children are a gift from the Lord. They're a real blessing.